We're back with more of Lake Effect Now. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. At first glance, Blooming Lotus Bakery might look like a typical cafe on Milwaukee's east side. But look closer and you'll see that the ingredient list is far more specialized than many gourmet bakeries. Free of grain, gluten, egg, dairy, cane sugar, oils, soy, and yeast. That might sound like a recipe for a hockey puck. However, Blooming Lotus sells everything from cupcakes to cookies, scones, and more. And I can tell you, they look as good as they taste.
It was the result of a lot of trial and error in the kitchen for proprietor Susan Goulet and her partner Lars Schlomer. Susan was diagnosed with Crohn's disease in adulthood, joining many other members of her family who suffer from that autoimmune disease and also severe food allergies.
So what started as a hobby baking bloomed into a business. For this month's Fit for You, we visited the bakery on North Avenue, and Susan Goulet explained more about the circumstances that led to baking with alternative ingredients.
The sister, who was born premature, had severe food allergies, you know, since she was a baby. And then our family had to deal with that. And then she was diagnosed with Crohn's. My father had Crohn's and died at the age of 27. My brother was diagnosed with Crohn's. Aunts and cousins have Crohn's. I wasn't diagnosed with Crohn's until I was in my late 30s. And so before that, I got to do a lot of baking and cooking, which was a passion, with regular ingredients. But then after I was diagnosed, then I needed to change. And I had this long history of family history of dealing with food issues. And so I started to make things that I could then eat. And then I made things, I would take them to the yoga center, to potlucks, and people just kept saying, these are so good, you have to open a bakery. And when the gluten-free fad came on, and the food industry was making all kinds of gluten-free things with rice flour and sugar, and I had very intelligent students saying that they were eating gluten-free and wasn't that terrific, I thought, okay, I have to open a bakery, you know, because there's just so much, there's just a better alternative.
Well, and with such a, you know, massive family history of dealing with autoimmune disease, did you feel like, you know, in a way you're dealing with a family curse? And what inspired you and empowered you to, instead of viewing it as, you know, this debilitating thing that your family is dealing with, to turn that into your motivation?
Well, what I found was that when I changed my diet and I got off the grains and got off the dairy in particular, then I stopped having symptoms and then was able to finally get off medication altogether. And that, coupled with a very strong yoga practice, I've been symptom and medication free for about 25 years. And so I just have this strong passion and conviction that people can do a lot of proactive things for their health. And then even if they've been diagnosed with something, they can really help their situation.
For people who don't have experience with Crohn's or similar disease or diabetes, what kind of strains and stressors can having a severe food allergy and also extreme dietary restrictions have on a person and even their family?
It is a lot of stress because particularly now there are a lot of small children who have very serious food allergies. And so their parents are living in a kind of fear and trepidation because how do they can't watch their kids at every moment, and where can they get things for their child to eat? And also the child, from what I experienced in our family with my sister, we were unable to take her safely to any restaurant. And she became, she was the one who was teased, you know, at school and bullied because she was eating strange foods and so forth. And what I was passionate about and what Lars is passionate about is creating a welcoming space where the food is safe and that families can come in and for the first time, the sick one, that's that little child that is just dragging behind with its head hanging down. The rest are thinking they're going to get a cupcake, but it's that child. And for the first time, they can have anything in the case and they can be just like everyone else. And so that's been a huge passion.
Everything in the both of yours case looks amazing and appetizing, but when someone first hears the words grain-free, gluten-free, egg-free, dairy-free, sugar-free, you know, additional oils, soy, yeast-free, some, you know, novice bakers or even just the general public may think that means flavor-free because
unfortunately, some of the over-the-counter options for gluten-free don't taste the greatest. They're not made in the best manner. So how did you both come to learn to bake these delicious foods with your personal pantry ingredients that needed to be the opposite of what traditional bakers are used to having?
A lot of experimentation, and particularly, I think I spent so many years with a passion of baking. You know, I spent years baking Julia Child recipes, and so I wanted things to look and taste absolutely delicious, because I did a lot of dinner parties and so forth years ago. And so I didn't want this to be some sort of consolation prize, that people could really come in and be excited about the food and not think, well, gee, it's gluten-free, this isn't bad. But their friends and family could say, hey, this really tastes terrific.
Now, going sugar-free is a really difficult challenge, too, because if anyone has had to, you know, maybe have a self-imposed diet or a medical-related diet that excludes sugar or even wheat, you know, it's amazing how many ingredients in the store have sugar or wheat in them when you would think that's not even supposed to touch the product that it's supposed to be in. So how are you trying to help people get more informed, you know, even if they come here not having a dietary restriction, but to be more informed about what goes into their foods?
I think there is a tremendous amount of education that needs to happen. And so Lars is exceptional at going to the grocery stores and standing there for hours doing tastings and samplings and explaining to people, because there's a lot of misconception. A lot of people are very excited about being gluten-free, but they actually don't quite understand where gluten comes from. Or they understand that they have an allergy to one food product, but they don't really understand that that food is part of a larger botanical family, plant family, and that all these other items in that plant family can also be causing them problems.
Now, Lars, what kind of research and education did you do for yourself? Were you always conscious of what was in foods, or was this something that came on as you both decided to open this bakery together?
Well, we both decided to open the bakery together. I've been eating healthy probably since the early mid-70s, when I had organic gardens, and I've always eaten quite well. A little history in my family. My great-grandparents owned two bakeries in Germany. Then my grandparents, who were, and my parents came from Cincinnati, Ohio, and they owned two bakeries in Cincinnati. So I've been around baking all my life, although I have no allergies, no problems whatsoever. So conventional baking, lots of sugar, lots of butter, was always my forte. So I changed up completely when Susan and I got together and adapted her style of baking. And it's just been wonderful ever since. I mean, the joys of little kids walking in the bakery and asking if, or their parents would ask, can Tommy eat anything you have here? He has this, 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 and this. And we'd say, Tommy can eat anything we have. And their smiles and the joy, little kids even more so than the adults, has been very, very rewarding. It's been a lot of fun. So although I still can eat anything on the planet, in keeping with my desire to stay healthy, energetic, I have adopted this way of eating with Susan. And I mean, we're in here every morning at 3 or 4 a.m. and quite often we're here until 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And we've done it for 3.5 years now. And I'm not slowing down yet. So it must be working for me.
Well, and I think one misconception about baking gluten-free, dairy-free, wheat-free, soy-free is that it makes it more of a chore. I mean, maybe a lot of people aren't in their kitchens enough already, but then when you limit the food ingredients that you have, it may dissuade people further. So what would you say to still encourage people to, that this still has the joy of baking that, Lars, you had in a traditional bakery with your family and with you having to shift your way of making food?
Well, I think people have to enjoy the challenge, because these ingredients don't work. They don't function the way that normal butter, normal cane sugar, normal wheat flour functions. You know, we're vegan, so we don't use eggs. How are we going to bind the things? You know, none of our flours have gluten, so how is it going to stick together? You know, Lars, kind of a master. I mean, he's figured out some mixing methods to really help these ingredients be at their best. And you also have to not be afraid to fail. You know, and because, you know, we'll put something in the oven and we just kind of look at it and go, oh, well, what happened there? And then you just turn around and you know, and tweak it and do it again.
So, Lars, what are some of the go-to ingredients and tricks that you've learned to have the similar binding effects that you knew with the traditional ingredients?
One of the things is timing. And this sounds pretty simple, but it's quite critical with this kind of baking. Occasionally, certain components of a recipe, we will mix some of the liquids 12, 16 hours before we're going to use them to give adequate time to that portion of the recipe to set, so that when we mix it with the dry ingredients, we get the end results we're looking for. In other cases, we want to move as quickly as possible with certain ingredients. So a lot of things have to do with timing. Other components are how finely something is ground, for instance. Quite often, chia is a popular ingredient these days, and people have this image that chia is very good. Well, chia seed, when you put it into the way most people approach it, they will put an amount of chia seed into a recipe, and it is still a solid seed. And consequently, it is not ingested into your system very well. It kind of passes right through and it doesn't do a lot of good. I will grind my chia into different consistencies. I have quite a few different consistencies for different products. Some that'll activate quickly, some that are much more time consumptive. But it will also give all those nutrients a chance to be taken in by the body. So there's various things. Timing is one thing. And again, with the flaxseed's one of our popular ingredients we use in many of our things. And flax has to be ground a certain way. If it is not, it'll ruin the recipe, and we can have things that will turn into a cement block, essentially, and we just toss it and try again. And trying again quite often is my resourcing and finding a better quality or a different grind or different formulation of whatever I am using.
So in addition to not only using safe ingredients, what are the additional health benefits of, you know, say, for example, the nut and sea flour? You know, the difference in fiber and good carbohydrates compared to what people would get at a traditional bakery shop?
We just let people see some of the comparisons on the nutrition. You know, for the same serving size, when our scones are coming in at 9 grams of protein, anywhere between 9 and 11, depending on the type of scone and how many nuts are in them, versus, you know, the national gluten-free has 2 grams of protein. And when you give you context, you know, a large egg has 6 grams of protein. So we've got a scone that has, say, our nutola, in the hippie scone, that scone is 11 grams of protein. It's almost as much as 2 eggs. And the fiber content is 7, whereas a bowl of oatmeal has 4. And the national gluten-free scone of the same serving size only has 1. So the nutrition is just off the chart. I mean, we're usually, you know, the fiber is going to be at least 4 times the normal fiber, and the protein is anywhere between doubled, you know, to 3 times. And the calories are comparable. And usually the carbohydrates, the net carbs, are half of what the normal products are. So it makes a huge difference over, just a week of eating.
Well, absolutely. And I know a lot of personal people in my life, you know, if they have to do gluten-free, a lot of the store-bought options, yes, it doesn't have the gluten, but there's so much higher fat content or other things that really don't make the difference worth it.
Exactly. You know, the typical gluten-free bread is made up of tapioca starch, rice flour, canola oil, potato starch, and then some sort of sweetener like maltodextrin. And it'll also be filled with xanthan gums or guar gums to hold it together. And so all of those ingredients, I mean, none of those ingredients has much nutritional value. And so instead we're using much costlier ingredients, but it's almond flour, coconut milk, golden flax meal. And, again, it just makes for a much more nutritious and frankly tastier product.
Right, because at the end of the day, you want to have a bakery with tasty foods that people will come back.
Right, exactly. And, when we first were talking about starting this bakery, we were getting different options that were in the stores, and some of the stuff I couldn't even eat, but Lars would sample them, and then there were paleo options and gluten-free things, and some of the things were just practically inedible, and then I would just say, oh, well, let's just give it to our little dog. And when she refused, then we knew, there was a problem,
Yeah. Well, and when you guys were first thinking of this idea, what kind of research did you do in looking into any other places, not even necessarily in the Milwaukee area, but even around the country or globally? Are there other bakeries that do what you guys do?
Close. There are a few in the country that are fairly close, but then they'll still be using cane sugar or eggs. There's no one that we've found, and I have put people to task on it. I've said, we're the only bakery like this in the world, as far as I know. And I put them to task, and they'll come back and say, I spent hours on the internet. I think you're right. I think you're the only bakery doing it this cleanly. And with our ingredients and no oils and no cane sugar and the rest, we haven't found anyone else anywhere that's doing it quite the way we are.
So obviously it's a great joy to make foods and products that come out well, that taste good. But, what's the best part of owning this place and having someone who tells you, I have never been able to go to a bakery and be able to buy anything safe? How does that make the both of you feel after the trials and tribulations to get these recipes just right, and especially with your health battles over your lifetime?
Well, I think that's just the real payoff because, frankly, by the end of the week, we're tired. It's a tremendous lot of work. It's a startup to begin with. We're, this little tiny place in Milwaukee. It's not like we're in some hip place in L.A. or something. And so it's tough going. But then when people come in and you've got a family or whatever, and particularly over Thanksgiving, we've had people just come in and they just sort of grab you by the arm and say, thank God you're here. We just didn't know what to do. And we've had brides being so grateful that they could come in and get a wedding cake that they could actually eat. It just makes a difference.
Susan Goulet and Lars Schlomer are the proprietors of Blooming Lotus Bakery on Milwaukee's East Side. They spoke with us as part of our monthly Fit for You segment. You can read more and find a link to more information at wuwm.com.